The first time I met His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, I was invited to ask him one question. He tends to go on and on, his people told me, so one question only. Of course I fretted. One question? I was interviewing His Holiness for a magazine column I wrote in which I explored ways to have a better life. The column was one of my smarter orchestrations. Anxiety-related illness had planted me in a spot such that I was too sick to hold down a normal job, too broke to get the healing treatments I needed. So I confected a gig where I tested different ways to heal myself. Two birds, one stone. I deliberated for days. How would I reduce things to the question that would provide a salve to all of us Westerners seeking a more meaningful path through the fuggy, constipated, heart-sinky angst of life? The choice left my head spinning and chattering. What is it exactly that we need to know? Are we here to evolve into higher beings? Why are we so alone? Is there a grand scheme to our allotted 85 years? When we meet a few weeks later, His Holiness kisses my hand and tosses his thongs aside. We sink into adjacent hotel room lounge chairs. I still don't have my one question, so I ask the most authentically pressing thing in that exact moment. How do I get my mind to shut up? You know, to stop the fretty chatter that makes us so nervous and unsettled and unable to grasp the present moment at the end of yoga classes when the instructor talks about it as though it's something you can buy off the shelf. His Holiness giggles and blows his nose on a paper serviette, shoving it down the front of his robe like my year four teacher used to. There's no use, he tells me. Silly. Impossible to achieve. If you do it, great. If not, big waste of time. But surely you can do it, I say. I mean, is the Pope a Catholic? Can the Dalai Lama steal his mind? No. If I sit in a cave for a year on a mountain, then maybe I do it. But no guarantee. He waves his hand. Anyway, I don't have time. He has better things to do, he tells me, like teaching altruism to massive crowds around the world. His Holiness then tells me about his recent trip to Japan, how he hits his running machine at 3 a.m. every day and all about his anger issues. Yes, the Dalai Lama gets cranky. But he says nothing further about the torturous human experience of having a fretful, frenzied mind that trips along ahead of us, just beyond our grip, driving us mad and leaving us thinking we've got it all so terribly wrong. It was as if the subject bored him. I leave feeling deflated and anxious. I didn't exactly have a pearly insight for my column, but a few days later I was defending his seemingly flaccid response to my close mate Ragni, and I realised what His Holiness had done. He'd given me a response that came with a screaming, cap-lettered subtext. You're okay as you are. He'd given me and everyone else out there whose whirring thoughts keep them awake until 4 a.m, trash-talking their poor souls into agitated despair, a big, fat, red-robed hug. It was perfect. Now, a strange thing happens when you realise that some gargantuan, all-looming issue you'd been fretting over no longer needs to be fixed. You take a deep, free breath, expand a little, release your grip, and get on with better things. I suspect you might be listening to these words here because you're a fretter with a mind that goes too fast, too high, too unbridled. And like me, you might have tried everything to fix this fretting, because fretters try really, really hard at everything. They also tend to think they need fixing. And like me, you might have wondered if there's another way. I'd like to say this up front. I write these very words because I've come to believe that you can be fretty and chattery in the head and awake at 4 a.m. and trying really hard at everything, and you can get on with having a great life. Hey, the Dalai Lama told me so. Actually, I'll go a bit further. I've come to believe that the fretting itself can be the very thing that plonks you on the path to a great life. When God was handing out the guidebook to life, I was on the toilet or hanging out nappies for mum. I was, I believe, the only person on the planet who'd missed out. The first time this realisation came crashing down on me, I was 15, crouching in an Asian-style squat behind a curtain in a Canberra shopping mall, waiting to see if I'd won the inaugural Face of Miss GB's modelling competition. Miss GB's was the teen section of the now-defunct Grace Brothers department store behemoth, should you be too young to know. A few months earlier, a matronly fitting room attendant had stopped me as I flicked through her bra rack and asked if she could take a photo with her point and click. Yeah, okay, I said, and half smiled, half frowned for the camera. I got a letter 2 weeks later inviting me to attend the finals being held at the mall's centre stage. Up for grabs was a modelling contract, a Dolly magazine shoot, and a bra and knickers package.